National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
As Easter approaches, the Church prepares to welcome many, many new members. In fact, this year, dioceses across the United States are reporting record numbers of catechumens. Register staff writer Matt McDonald joins us to talk about this remarkable spike.
And then we're joined by Register staff writer Jonah McKeown with an update on all things AI.
Hello, I'm Matthew Bunsen, Vice President, Editorial Director of EWTN News and host of Register Radio, joined as always by my co-host, Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Hello, Shannon.
Good to be with you, Matthew.
So many U.S. dioceses are expecting heavy increases in people joining the Catholic Church at Easter 2026, including some with reported record highs. The Register has been exploring this rather notable trend. Many U.S. dioceses are expecting heavy increases in people joining the church at Easter. And what's happening? What is the cause of this? And how enduring might this trend actually prove to be? We're joined by Matt McDonald, Register staff writer and a frequent guest on this show, including just a couple of weeks ago, Matt, when we talked about the resurgence of faith apparently in South Boston. So welcome back to Register Radio.
Thanks, Matthew.
So let's start with some of the numbers. What exactly have we been seeing at the Register?
So I contacted every diocese in the country, and I got a response rate of roughly 40%. So these are not national numbers. Those don't exist. But what we're seeing is a large number of dioceses that have increases, and some of them are huge. The sample size is 71. Of those, 5 reported decreases. And the decreases we're talking about are converts generally. So catechumens, which are unbaptized people becoming baptized as Catholics at Easter Vigil. And then candidates who have already been baptized, so they're Christians, they're being received into the church. Mm-hmm. And the 66 of the 71 dioceses that I've got the numbers for so far have seen increases, some of them as much as double. So for instance, Norwich, Connecticut, which is a small diocese, 112%. Pueblo, Colorado, which is a small diocese, 105%. But then you have a very large Archdiocese of Philadelphia at 60%, and the Archdiocese of Los Angeles is about 54%.
Yeah, that's amazing, Matt. And let's talk about the data for a minute. So essentially, you had to create your own database. Why is that?
These numbers are surprisingly hard to get a hold of. At this point, it wouldn't be surprising that they're hard to get a hold of because these receptions into the church haven't actually taken place yet. They're not taking place until Easter Vigil. But the numbers don't become finalized in many dioceses until much later in the year. And then they're eventually reported to a central source, but that central source doesn't offer immediate totals. So numbers in the church, not always easy to get.
Yeah. Now, let's put a little context to this, because we know that, as you report, most dioceses hit their lowest numbers in recent times in 2021, the year after the coronavirus shutdowns. And we obviously saw sharp declines in all kinds of different ways in terms of what the church is dealing with. But then we're also seeing, sort of across the board, a decline overall in religious affiliation. But these numbers are still pretty significant, aren't they?
They are. And it's another important caveat. We're not suggesting that the Catholic Church in America is growing. The surveys suggest that lots of people are leaving the Catholic Church, and more people are leaving than are coming in. But there's a lot of activity. The image in my mind is India and Pakistan after World War II, when they separated, and you had lots of Muslims leaving India for the new Pakistan, lots of Hindus leaving Pakistan for the new India, or not the new India, the old India. Mm-hmm. And so we've got this sense of movement in the church, lots of people leaving, but also lots of people coming in. There's something going on, as some of the people I talked to have said.
Yeah, Matt, I think one of the surprises for me is that we know, and you've written about some of these hotspots around the country, particularly in the Southeast and Southwest, where the church is growing. There's been a migration of people from the Rust Belt, from the Northeast, and that's very interesting. And and very dynamic. But again, this is just a one-year snapshot, but we're looking at a lot of your dioceses that have the biggest increases are in the north and northeast and Rust Belt areas. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, big increases in New England, for instance, which is considered by, according to surveys, the most secular part of the country. So Providence, Rhode Island, that's the Providence, which is the entire state of Rhode Island, 76%. The Diocese of Fall River, Massachusetts, which is just next to the Diocese of Providence, 71%. And Norwich, Connecticut, which is southeastern Connecticut, 112%. The Diocese of Manchester, New Hampshire is up over 50%. That's the most, some surveys say, the most secular state in the country. If you look at New York State and Pennsylvania, also some large increases. Harrisburg, 77%, for instance. Altoona, Johnstown, 84%. There's growth in numbers of converts coming into the church, even spectacular growth in places where the church seems to be declining.
And let's start asking that obvious question. Why is that happening?
Everybody involved in this business would say the Holy Spirit, God, is doing something.
Good place to start.
Good place to start. More than one person said that's a good place to finish. That is the answer. In human terms, how do we explain this? Well, a number of people said that they see, particularly young people, and by young people we mean people in their 20s and early 30s, looking around at a world and society seemingly falling apart and looking for something that they can rely on. And the Catholic Church, for many, seems to be that thing. Another thing that's going on is, in some places at least, they've been doing the last several years more types of outreach to try to get people interested in the Catholic Church than have been going on in the past. So to give you one example, and this is not something I get into in this story, although it will be in a future story, one parish in Rhode Island, rather than just plod along with one or two or three converts coming to the church every year, instituted a program, a four-week program, where people were asked in the pews come up with people who they thought either should come back to the church or might be interested in becoming a Catholic. And then the congregation prayed for these people for a week during Mass. And then eventually at the end of it, these people were contacted specifically and invited to come into what was then known as the Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults program. And from the numbers of two or three a year, it zoomed up to like 25 or 30. Those sorts of programs are bearing fruit in some places.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers, as you and I have talked about, they beg all sorts of questions. And I think I gave the example of the donut shop that suddenly becomes really hot, maybe through some social media post. And the good news is there's a line outside the door. And the bad news is there's a line outside the door, and they really don't know how to handle it. So what are some of the questions that you have as we dig into some of these numbers and increases about how the church is managing this?
So first, small details. Where do you put all the people when you have various liturgies? Like, for instance, Rite of Election, which is something that takes place in early Lent in most dioceses. And the idea is to welcome and formalize converts coming into the church. In my own cathedral, the diocese I live in, it was almost full this year, which is something I'd never seen before. And other places have reported having to have multiple rites of election or multiple other liturgies to welcome converts into the faith. That's a, I guess, small practical problem. Larger problem that people talk about is, how do you make sure they stay in the church? Mm-hmm. And that's something that's gotten a lot of discussion over recent years, because some of the people who have shown up at Easter Vigil and been very into it all of a sudden disappear and stop going to church. It can't just be that you welcome them into the church and say, now, good luck and hope you come back. But rather, it has to be something where you're kind of walking with these people and inviting them specifically to events, and try to go on their spiritual journey with them even after they formally become Catholics.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with Jonah McKeown about the Gen Z factor in all of this. But what does our reporting indicate in terms of like the age spectrum of people who are coming in?
Across the country, people I talked to said that this increase is being driven by young adults. And that's surprising because in the Rite of Christianization of Adults process, it's typically been middle-aged people and then some older people. And obviously everybody is welcome. But the idea of young adults driving the increase is new. And it's something that's been noticeable to people who administer these programs. It's been surprising to them. And it's something that seems to be happening in lots of different places. As you alluded to, Matthew, I did a story recently on a young adults group in South Boston, which is a neighborhood of Boston, Massachusetts, where they're getting more than 200 on a Wednesday night young adults to come to a young adults Catholic group. That sort of thing seems to be happening in other places too.
Yeah, Matt, as we speak, we're putting together our April the 5th print issue, which has your story, Something's Happening, on the cover. There's a great photo. I think it's from the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, but it shows a shot of the rite of election, and it's a fascinating photo because everything you just mentioned is kind of captured there. I do see some young faces, yes. I also see some middle-aged folks. I also see a gentleman in the front row who is wearing clerics, begging the question. Well, there's a story there somewhere. So, it's going to be fascinating to dig into what's really happening. It's going to vary by region, I'm sure.
It will vary by region, and yet one of the interesting things about the data is how much of the country is included. If you look at just about any region of the country, there are at least certain dioceses that have large increases. And again, I'm not saying that it's every diocese. I'm not even saying that a large increase this year is the end of the story. Some dioceses said, hey, we had a large increase last year, and now we've maintained it or almost maintained that number. So really a one-year thing is not the whole story. It's more like a trend. And the interesting thing about the trends is a place like the Archdiocese of Newark, where a priest told me that in 2025, which is last year, they exceeded all recent records going back a number of years. And then in 2026, they exceeded that record by a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always the eye-popping number year over year. Sometimes it's the number from several years ago that you really pay attention to.
Well, Matt, thanks for your reporting on this. I know this is something we're going to be tracking now for quite some time, but we can say one thing with absolute certainty, that every new person joining the church is loved and welcomed, and we are so happy that you're here.
Amen.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio on EWTN Radio. Next up, we talk, as promised, with staff writer Jonah McKeown. Stay tuned here on EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. I'm Matthew Bunsen here, as always, with Shannon Mullen, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register. Welcome back, Jonah. It is always a pleasure to have you. And we've had the opportunity to talk to you a few times the last few weeks in studio, so it's great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Matthew.
So the topic, and you've been doing a lot of reporting on this for us, is AI, artificial intelligence. One of the questions that I'm asked a lot, and I don't consider myself competent to answer it in a comprehensive way, is everyone is afraid of AI that is going to be taking away everyone's jobs or replacing them. How exactly does that work?
Right. It's It's difficult to answer in a way because obviously every job, every profession is going to be affected in a different manner. And, you know, as I'm answering this, I'm remembering a recent interview I had with a gentleman called Taylor Black, who works at a high level of AI at Microsoft. And he's very interested in this question of how AI is going to affect the workplace and affect basically the nature of work and how we think about work and leisure. And I was asking him about this very topic, and he was saying that AI is ideally, as long as the people using it have enough formation to not let it kind of take away their cognitive ability and just, in his words, make us all dumber, it could be very helpful for a lot of professions. Like an example he gave was he has a handyman who uses AI for all of his kind of back office stuff, like his billing and taking phone calls, something that someone might need a human secretary for. This handyman is able to use AI for that. And then also he has all of his instruction manuals on AI. So that's just one small example. And I wouldn't have necessarily thought of a handyman as being someone who could benefit from AI. But there's certainly, I think, assuming we can find a way as a society to make these benefits kind of equitable and not only confined to the top, I think there are going to be a lot of benefits to the workplace from AI. Now, there's definitely going to be some downsides as well. You know, people are going to have to be adaptable in the face of, you know, AI doing some of these jobs that previously only humans could do. So, yeah, the answer is that it's going to be very different for many different professions, but hopefully if we can do this right as a society, it will be helpful to people.
Yeah, our church has had a lot to say about AI, and one question is anybody listening, or at least the people who are really the architects of this technology, you know, are they listening? But before we get into that question, what are the sort of major themes that the church and the popes and their various documents have laid out as far as their interest in AI?
Yeah, there's definitely some very common themes in a lot of the statements and the pledges and things that have come out of the Vatican. Kind of the first one to mention is actually back in 2020, there was a document called the Rome Call for AI Ethics, which is basically a brief pledge that several major companies, including Microsoft, have signed on to, basically just calling for, you know, accountability, impartiality, security, privacy, just some important values that should be inherent to AI. But later on, for example, in the January 2025 document, Antiqua et Nova, the Vatican has really very much laid out the church's vision of what humans are and how we think, and the importance of viewing AI as a product of human intelligence, a useful tool perhaps, but obviously not anything approaching something with the dignity and worth that we have as humans. And that's really a very common theme throughout Pope Leo's speeches. You know, he hasn't necessarily discouraged the use of AI entirely. He's mentioned that it is going to cause a lot of change, including in the workspace, as we talked about. But it's always oriented, the Vatican's message on AI is always oriented toward human flourishing. And how can AI help us in you know, creating an environment here on Earth where people can freely seek God and freely practice their faith? And so that's definitely been a common theme throughout the many, many messages that the Vatican has put out so far on AI.
There's an interesting connection that's sometimes made, and I know even Pope Leo has talked about a little bit, and that is the relationship or potential relationship between something like AI and transhumanism, the idea of trying to perfect the human person using these artificial means. Can you talk about that?
Right. So transhumanism is a term that people may or may not be familiar with. It's basically it's kind of the quest to improve humanity, or, you know, help us escape from these bodies of ours. And obviously that is not compatible with a Catholic anthropology. You know, as Catholics, we believe that we are embodied souls. So our bodies are an integral part of who we are. And so, that's kind of a big theme of the Vatican's messages, is that, you know, us as embodied souls with intellects, that's just such a unique part of what makes us human. That is what it means to be human. And so, you know, the idea that kind of a computerized mind could ever replace us or be kind of on equal footing with us is kind of, I guess, absurd in the face of that.
And then to the second part of that, are the architects of AI receptive at all to these principles?
Well, several of them are, and you know, a couple of the big name architects of AI have at least, you know, visited the Vatican, attended these conferences. Whether they're really listening closely is another question. But one such company to highlight is a company that we've spoken about here on the radio before, Anthropic. There's certainly reasons to be critical of Anthropic for other reasons, but one very good and interesting thing about the company, to their credit, is that they have actually, of their own volition, sought out Catholic ethicists and thinkers to look over their constitution, which is literally just a big document laying out, this is what our AI model is, this is what it will, these are the lines it will not cross, these are the things it will not do, these are the things that we want it to do. And a lot of the ethical principles, although they're not, you know, necessarily based on a Catholic worldview, of Anthropic's AI, you know, have been reviewed by Catholic ethicists. And yeah, in answer to your question, some of the AI builders are listening, but there's definitely more work to do.
So everyone is afraid of AI, it seems, or many, many people at least. What are the genuine fears on the part of the church about AI?
So I would say the biggest kind of overarching fear, I guess you could say, that the church has is, you know, handing over what is uniquely human about us to AI. So kind of outsourcing our intellect to it, you know, not thinking for ourselves, I guess, is one of the biggest things. But then, of course, there are other very important considerations too. I mean, the formation of young people and making sure that, you know, young people are able to form their own minds in this world without, you know, just, again, AI thinking for them.
Well, Pope Leo has actually talked about the worries about cognitive development, right, in young people.
Right. Yeah, I believe he spoke about that at the live address last year at NCYC.
Yeah, I think it's interesting going forward as you report this is, other than the church and what it's offered, there aren't bodies really with that moral authority to lay out some basic principles. So it seems like, you know, we really need the church to weigh in on these topics as complex as they are and provide some basic guidance.
And is this a classic case that if only somebody, we're talking years from now, if only somebody had listened to the church, we wouldn't be in this problem?
Absolutely. I think that's totally true. And it's difficult too, because AI development is so tied up with, you know, geopolitical interests, and, you know, the U.S. is racing to develop things, and China is racing to develop things, and we really need that voice of authority from Pope Leo, because you know, the Vatican doesn't have a stake in that. He's concerned with the salvation of our souls, and so yeah, I think it's definitely an important voice to have.
So, last question is: if you're a Catholic and you want to find a reliable AI engine or platform, what is your recommendation at this point for something that you can use safely and ethically?
That's a really good question. I do use a couple of AI tools. I use Google's Gemini is pretty good. I don't want to necessarily give like a wholesale recommendation or anything. I think it's just important for people to recognize a couple things. One is that every AI product is going to have limitations, and it's just important to not fall into the trap of thinking, oh, well, this is my friend. This is someone who helps me. It's a tool that can help you, but it's not someone on the level that we are, and that's okay.
And don't just assume that everything AI tells you or gives you is accurate.
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah, in terms of even just in terms of accuracy, there's still a lot for them to do, but they have plenty of money to try and improve the models.
Well, Jonah, as always, thank you for your reporting. And I know I'm a fan of your work, especially in this area. And I know a lot of our readers are too.
Thank you. Well, it's great to be here again.
God bless.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for Register Radio for this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, and Shannon Mullen, I'm Matthew Bunsen. Please take care and God bless.